Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the two hosts has to be taken on walks and given treats constantly to stay motivated. The other host is a dog. Joined again this week by a repeat guest.
So disappointed in you, Mina. So disappointed.
Well, now you're ruining the surprise. I had a whole thing. I was going to tell people not to get excited. It's not Danny Kelly. It's not Charles McDonald. It's not Mike Ryan. Yes, folks. It's the one and only Dominique Foxworth.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back.
I'm so happy to be back. I mean, you like to downplay it, but everyone knows I'm the greatest. Whenever any other guest comes on the show, they all reference me and ask your fans if they're better than me. And the answer is always, no, I'm the greatest.
You're definitely the most competitive and definitely the biggest hater of the guests, which is why I think you're particularly appropriate for this episode. So we're going to break the construct of the pod a little bit. It's like when, you know, good TV shows have bottle episodes, right? Where they only focus on something. That's the term, right? A bottle episode.
I don't know if that's the term, but anyways. I know what you're talking about. Like, I feel like Blackish did that a lot last season, where it was like they just take one episode to make a point.
This is a very special episode of the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. So, you know, in the past, we've been looking at games, and really, actually, there's not that many good games this week, low-key, especially compared to last weekend. But also, you know, it's getting to the point where looking at the good games, we're ending up talking about the same teams every week. The Rams and the Saints and the Steelers and stuff like that. And so, and the Chiefs. Actually, we haven't talked about the Chiefs in a while. But I wanted to get away from that a little bit because we've been neglecting a lot of teams here. And by a lot of teams, I mean the trash teams. So we're going to be talking about the good teams a lot down the stretch, especially as we get closer to the playoffs. But today, with my hater friend, I wanted to talk about those teams, you know, just the teams that where things kind of really worked out this season. So I'm instead of going, there's a bunch of ways to choose that. You could go by DVOA, you could go by record. I'm going to go by 538's playoff probability model, which you can find on 538.com, just to kind of choose the most hopeless teams at the moment. And so in order from first, least likely to make the playoff. Well, a bunch of them are tied for less than 1%, whatever. But I'm going to go by their order, and it's going to be Oakland, the Giants, the Browns, the Cardinals, the Niners, the Bills, the Jets, and then the Broncos, which, you know, it's kind of, if one team doesn't really belong in that picture, I wouldn't really characterize Denver as a trash team, per se. But I think they're an interesting team, so I'm kind of keen on talking about them. Dominique, when you hear all of those teams, what jumps out at you about them? What trends do you see?
This whole, it's an offensive league. And as much as I've wanted to fight it for a long time, that's what I, from doing the research to talk about this on this show, I just noticed that a lot of these teams have good defenses and good defensive players, but you're not good in this league if you can't score points. And as much as it pains me as a former cornerback, I guess I'm always a cornerback. I don't know. What is that? Is being a cornerback like being addicted to a substance where once you do it, you're always
like a state of mind.
Okay. Yeah. So I mean, it pains me to say it, but defense doesn't win championships anymore. Defense is nice to have. Yeah. It's not as reliable to make yourself a good or make your team good as having a good offense is.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping you would say. Although after Denver, we get to, you know, the Bucks, which would be a team with a good offense and a bad defense by the numbers. But yeah, some of those teams I mentioned, Denver, the Jets, the Bills, arguably the Cardinals and the Browns, they have not only not terrible defense, they have pretty good defenses, some of them. So you're right to point that out. I think the other thing that obviously jumps out is, almost every rookie quarterback is in this group. And we'll, talk about that. So, you know, we got the Browns, the Cardinals, the Bills, and the Jets. And obviously a lot of that has to do with the fact that they were bad last year and that's why they got those quarterbacks. But, so we're going to talk about these teams and we're going to kind of, you know, rather than focusing too much on what they need, cause we'll still be around for the draft and the beginning of free agency, I kind of was hoping we could diagnose, Dominique, what went wrong for each team this year. Okay, you know, what were the biggest problems? Why they're in this trash heap? So Lenny has been playing a bigger role in the podcast. He's been sending me feedback emails after every episode, unprompted, don't really need the emails, but he's been typing them out. And one of the things that he has been singling out every episode, really, and it's kind of annoying, is that he thinks they're too long. I would argue that it's because he goes on an afternoon walk when I'm done and he just wants to get to the walk. I'm not saying he's corrupted, but he might have, you know, some ulterior motives here. But in any case, I have allowed him, in his increasing effort to get more turf on this podcast, he's going to tell us when it's time to stop talking about each team. You'll hear what that sounds like. All right. So, Dominique, the first team I want to talk about is the Raiders, and I'm just going to kick it off and ask you, there's so many things wrong with this team. If you had to diagnose the biggest problem looking at this season so far, what would it be with the Oakland Raiders?
I'm going to go the other way. It's like, I think that they are a bad team and they aren't playing well, but I think they're the first NFL team to legitimately be tanking. Like, I honestly believe that John Gruden got a 10-year deal and he came in and he was like, look, we're not going to win the Super Bowl this year. We're going to blow it up. So I think that they kind of want to suck. He wants to get rid of Reggie McKenzie, the current general manager, which, I mean, there's plenty of reason to do that. But it feels like to me that all this talk that John Gruden did before the season about them being hard-nosed and doing whatever 1990s football, like all that was BS to me. Like the decisions that he's made show me someone who does not want to win this year and someone who has the security of a 10-year contract.
I think you're absolutely right. By the way, it's funny that I was thinking about the 90s offense comments and, you know, the hard-nosed football and stuff. They've actually run a pretty modern offense. The scheme hasn't been an issue at all. It's you know, like a updated West Coast, and it's not bad. I think Carr has had troubles with adjusting to it at times, and I think it's also difficult to run behind that offensive line, which you could argue is one of the biggest problems with this team, given to how good it looked a few years ago and the fact that they're, you know, in the first round, they drafted a left tackle who got hurt and struggled a bit, along with other elements of the offense. Thanks, Tom Cable. But I think your point is really astute, and it raises the question of how do you tank, right? Because I think there's something to be said for being very deliberate. He's gotten great returns for the players he's traded away, arguably too much. And yet, it seems completely miserable there, right? And we've talked about this on the podcast before. It raises the opportunity of who wants to go there and whether or not they can develop the players that they're able to get with those picks. I think what's so discouraging to me, Dominique, is that while this tanking plan is underway, it feels like every player who they're keeping has regressed. I was thinking that watching the defense against Niners, which, I mean, the whole game was just an utter failure for them from start to finish, right? And we know that the Raiders don't have a pass rush because John Gruden reminds us that they don't have a pass rush, thus setting himself to be owned on the internet. But I was very disappointed by, you know, there's guys on that team who shouldn't look terrible. Like, Carl Joseph was a promising prospect at one point. Tahir Whitehead is an NFL player who has been good in the past. Conley, I mean, there's just all of these players look terrible, okay? And Arden Key and Maurice Hurst looked okay in the beginning of the season. But I guess, again, you know, you're tanking, you're getting rid of your best players, that's great. But, you know, if you're not, like, can you really write off this year altogether?
So I you and I talk a lot, and I forget how great you are and how deep your football knowledge is, because you got to give me positions with some of those names. You're just yelling out names. I'm like, I don't know who that guy is, but the bottom line is I believe that you're faulty in your assumption that any of these players are going to be kept, or that's my belief at this point. Geez. Like, I don't know, maybe some of them be kept, but I don't think that John Gruden believes that he has a core to his team, so I don't think he necessarily cares. I do think it's dangerous to put forth a team that you don't think is going to win. Like, the players can see through that. And I get on people, commentators who start commenting on culture, because I don't think that they necessarily understand what it means in this context. But I do think that there is something to be said for standards that are acceptable. And once you start creating that, that's going to be hard to change. If anyone is still there, that's going to be hard to change. When you start to try to hit that switch and shift into winning mode, that's not something that's done easily. It's not a video game.
Yeah, I had a conversation in the offseason with an NFL executive, no big deal, about the difference between basketball and football and the process and tanking and all of that. And he said something similar to what you were saying, which is you can't flip the switch in football, right? Well, one, there's fewer games, right? And the fans are going to get really pissed at you and they have to watch this kind of stuff. So there's an organizational sort of challenge to trying to tank the way the Sixers did or whatever. But it is, you can't like make a complete, you can't blow a team up in entirely. You can say, okay, we're going to suck for luck. We don't have a quarterback this year, but you know, we're going to choose pieces on the team to focus on improving. Maybe it's the defense. Maybe it's the defensive line. Maybe we're looking, you know, to establish a strong running game or improve the offensive line in advance of next year. But you can't have a complete organizational meltdown from top to bottom, because when you do get your guy or you do start getting to use those picks, as you were saying, Dominique, transitioning them into the system when the system is non-existent is really difficult. And I look at the Raiders and I don't see any core. You know, I mentioned Key and Hurst. They were draft picks this year, so they're going to be there next year, but you don't see foundational players on this team. And I think that's a huge problem for next year.
And I think there are behaviors that help you win games. And like, this is cliche stuff, but good teams that I were on, that I was on, guys would meet up after and go to someone's house and watch film together. And like, these are things that work and build a culture. Like in Denver, we would go to defensive dinners. And like, these are things that I know sound stupid, and I would laugh at someone if they said this was the difference between winning and losing. But in a game, dependent as football is on each other's teammates, like that stuff helps. And that's not something that guys are motivated to do when it feels like you have nothing to play for and it feels like your coach doesn't seem to care. And once you start getting those guys in, that... Oh, Lenny, so rude. I'm gonna respect Lenny because his name is on the show. So I'm, as soon as he barks, I'm done.
I think we're nearing the end of this anyways. I think your point is well taken. Moving on to a team that has, refused to, well, it's got an opposite direction. There's no strategy there. If there is a strategy, it was the wrong one going into the season. That's your New York Football Giants. So this feels like, I think, it's a little too obvious, right, to just say Eli and that they should have had a plan and a quarterback. But I look at a lot of their organizational moves and I don't see a strategy. I see a lot of errors, I guess, beyond that. For example, you know, paying Nate Solder a ton of money to be sort of the core piece, the featured guy on that offensive line. Obviously, that hasn't worked out. Pretty much the whole offensive line has been awful, aside from Will Hernandez has been sort of the one bright spot, although he had a really bad game recently. You know, on the defense, I think, Dominique, though, is a little bit more concerning to me, especially because they have more talent on that side of the ball. They're 28th in defensive DVOA. I checked Pro Football Focus. They are 25th in coverage, 29th in pressure, 24th in run defense. So, you know, looking at this team, do you feel like if they had a quarterback other than Eli, if they had, let's say they, in alternate universe, if they had gone for a rookie, and like we've discussed, a lot of the rookies are on the worst teams in the NFL, that they would have had a better season or a more promising season in any way, given the issues with the rest of the roster?
No, they would still suck. I think it's interesting that we, that.
But stuck with hope.
Yeah. It's coincidental, but bad. I think it's good that we follow the Raiders with, the Giants, because I think the Giants have done the opposite. And now, of the Raiders, or at least of what John Gruden's now, the Giants have tried to win now, even though they didn't have a win now roster. And you mentioned Nate Solder, but the year before, or 2 years before that, they brought in a bunch of defensive free agents and it seemed to have worked. Like they've always lived on or proceeded on the premise that they were close when they haven't actually been close. And now it seems with them trading away guys like Snacks and Apple, which is great. I love Snacks and Apples. That shows that they are finally coming to the realization that I think that they should have a while ago, that it was time to move on. And drafting a running back first overall is another symbol of like, hey, we're going to win now. But I don't know. I think that there's some promising signs, even though they don't have a young quarterback, there's promising signs that they get it now, that they understand that their window has closed and it's time to try to do a real rebuild, not just throw some kind of finishing touches on, which is what they have been doing, thinking that Nate Solder is going to be the difference. Or was it Olivier Vernon and those guys when they had those signings that was going to be a difference when it never was?
And Vernon's been okay. You know, he's been pretty good, actually. He was really good against Trent Williams and the Skins. But, you know, this defense just has a lot of holes in the roster. The absence of a pass rush is pretty stark at this point, which is actually going to be interesting ahead of next year's draft, if, you know, to see if they go after Nick Bosa or a Herbert or, you know, whoever. It's a bad draft for quarterbacks. It's a much better defensive line draft. You know, there, you look across the defense, and you might remember also they got rid of Snacks. They traded away JPP last year. Lorenzo Carter has been okay, the rookie linebacker, but.
There you go. Give me those positions. I appreciate you.
They certainly could use the, BJ Hill, by the way, who I don't know if you remember, we were very amused in the draft when they drafted a guy named BJ at 69. Very mature here on the.
Okay, let me ask you, since you brought up the draft, before Lenny barks us out, I need to ask you a question. Is there a universe where you could go back on your opinion that Saquon was a bad pick? Like, let's say none of these quarterbacks pan out. Saquon is obviously a really good player. He's a yes. better player than any of those quarterbacks are at this time.
No, and thank you for reminding me how right I was. Not enough people bring that up, you know, how just absolutely prescient and correct I was to criticize them for their decision there. Although, again, you know, we talk about these teams with the rookie quarterbacks, so they're not good, but at least there's a plan, okay? The Giants, like, the issue is with the plan. Saquon's really interesting, Dominique, because he reminds me a lot of Todd Gurley's rookie season. I made this comparison a lot where he's not been super consistent. He's broken off a few explosive runs. A lot of that has to do with the offensive line, right? Obviously, with Gurley, it's worked out too. Once the offensive line was fixed, once they actually had an offense around him. But with the Rams, they had Goff. So there was a plan, you know? And so it's hard to see a future in which the outlook gets better.
My point, I'm not arguing this. I'm just saying that there is a world where none of these guys pan out. And I think it's inarguable at this point that Saquon Barkley is a, like, future Pro Bowler, like, potential all-pro player. Like, that, I think we can all see that in the big plays that he's made. There's a chance that none of these quarterbacks turn out to be any good.
If they had had anything else, I think that would have softened my stance that they should have drafted a quarterback. It's more that they didn't have any plan at all. You know
at
what I mean?
The most important position. They had a plan.
At the most important position. Right. The plan was Eli Manning. But yeah, there are just a lot of holes throughout this roster, Dominic. You know, obviously they've got the skill players on offense, but just to continue on the defense a little bit, yeah, the pass rusher, free safety is an issue there, opposite Landon Collins, who's still very good. So a lot of issues on the Giants, and we'll see. I mean, it's pretty clearly.
The worst part about the Giants for me is that they are going to go into this rebuild and the clock is going to run out on Odell Beckham and also run out on Saquon Barkley once they build up the talent around them.
Which is, you know, always the issue with the NFL team. It's timing everything, timing the big contracts to having the rookie quarterback. A team that doesn't have that problem, but has a lot of other problems is the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think you can look at this, what's happened this year, and pick any other issue. Or if we're trying to diagnose the biggest issue on any team, I think I don't see how you can go anywhere else than coaching with this, obviously, given the turmoil that they've had here in Cleveland.
You could, if you wanted to, you could go a few rungs higher and say that it is the owner.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I 100%. Think that. As far as making play, excuse me, as far as Sunday to Sunday, I think coaching is the problem. But I think that since the Browns have re-entered the league, they've lacked the stability that a couple of the teams, namely the Ravens and the Steelers in their own division, they've lacked the stability that they've had. And I think that's hurt them because what is also inarguable is that they have a very, very talented defensive roster.
Oh, offense? Yeah. I mean, they have foundational pieces on defense, right? You know, we talked a lot about Larry Ogunjobi and Myles Garrett on this podcast, Denzel Ward, Joe Schobert, Demaryius Randall's been really good. I mean, up and down the roster, you see guys who you want in that organization for a while. And they're third in defensive DVOA, which I imagine will go down a little bit after last week. I think they've been a lot better in pass defense than run defense, and you see a lot of issues with tackling. And they were, you know, you saw Greg Williams and his aggression kind of exposed by the Chiefs in their screen game. But defense is not the problem with this team. It is the offense and how it's been deployed. Baker Mayfield has just been brutalized over the last few weeks. Desmond Harrison, the left tackle, you know, after Joe Thomas retired, they were kind of at a panic situation, left tackle. He's been a huge issue. They had Greg Robinson slide over, and that was a slight, you know, you might remember the former number two overall pick was who was traded to Cleveland. So he slid over, but, you know, it was a little bit better, but that's something that's going to have to be fixed. There was some promising stuff you know, in the last game, you finally saw them using Nick Chubb, you know, after they traded away Carlos Hyde. And he looks really, really good to me. Just, you know, was breaking tackles all over the place. They were using him a little bit in the passing game as well. But I think they're going to have to improve the receiver position. Njoku's been fine, but I mean, I can't imagine Browns fans are thrilled watching what Josh Gordon's doing in New England. Speaking of organizational and your point.
Since we're talking, I mean, if we're going to take time to celebrate the times where you were right, if I remember correctly, you really didn't love the Denzel Ward pick. But Denzel Ward is a baller.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, please. I've caught that L numerous times.
Okay. Do you catch L's? I've heard you say that before. I've heard you say catch L's. I feel like you take L's. I don't think you catch L's.
I take them. I catch them. I accept them. I subscribe to them. They're numerous. Every time the Panthers come up on this podcast, I offer the caveat that I deserve all of the L's in the world.
But the Panthers, we're not going to talk about on this pod, but to be fair, no one could have anticipated that the oldest offensive coordinator in the league was going to somehow figure out how to incorporate one of the more modern quarterbacks in the league into what it seems to be a pretty impressive offense. Like the polls were in your favor. It just didn't turn out the right way.
Well, you know, wrapping this on the offense. So, you know, what do you think Baker Mayfield needs, right? Because if we're going to say coaching, we're going to say the owner, we're going to talk about, you know, losing Gordon and maybe not getting everything out of the run game and having issues in the offensive line. Like, where do you focus your energies in terms of building around Mayfield if you're the Cleveland Browns?
Yeah, I think obviously it's with coaches and not just with the head coach, but it's with offensive coordinator and quarterback coach. And I remember when we wrote that piece on Lamar Jackson, we spent a lot of time talking to people, including our very own Matt Hasselbeck, about how young quarterbacks can grow and what's most important. And the most important thing that he said is having a veteran in the room with you and also having a good quarterback coach that can help you day to day with the small things. The offensive coordinator has to worry about the entire offense. And obviously they should be tied closely with the quarterback and making sure they have plays that they're comfortable with. But the minor gains that will turn out to be major results on the field will come from him working with a good quarterback coach. But I'll throw the question back at you and ask, do you think that Baker's the guy? Like he got them their first win. It was all exciting and no one's really checked back in from the national media necessarily. And he's been not great. And there's plenty of reasons to explain it away, but he hasn't been. If he would have started his career the way that he's playing now, I don't think that we would feel as confident about his future as many of us do.
Yeah, I think it's reasonable to argue that they rushed him in a little bit, right? There was an injury and all of that. And I guess I don't think the disparity, you know, what he brought to the table necessarily was that as great maybe as it seemed at first, but he was very, very good in this Chiefs game, actually. I still think he's the best rookie quarterback in the class so far. He's shown me the most, I'll put it that way. Well, we're going to get to the other guys. You know, we're going to get to the Jets and we'll get to Darnold. So hard. This whole, the conversation of like, when do you start a rookie quarterback? What do you need? There's no right answer, right? Because you look at Jared Goff, who has the worst rookie season of any quarterback, I think, in NFL history, and then comes back and is great. Or you look at Mahomes, who sits for a year and it ends up being the right decision because he's great too. And I don't think there's any right answer other than you have to have a good team around them, which is so dumb because it's so obvious.
It's not just a good team though, but it's a good team that is well coached or smartly coached. I think helps because it's putting their talent in the right place because everyone, you don't become a first round quarterback without having some skills. Having them in an offense that allows them to lean on those skills and not asking them to do things that they're not good at, I think is part of the problem. And that's true for the people that surround them, from the linemen to the receivers and running backs.
And the line, I think, if I would venture to pick a most important unit, I don't know. Coaching's probably more important, but the offensive line is so obvious. I mean, look at what happened with the Rams, looking at Mahomes, who gets to play behind one of the better offensive lines in football. None of these rookie quarterbacks are behind good offensive lines right now, right?
Nope.
And so it does seem like, okay, if I'm the team and I'm going to focus my energy in terms of where am I going to draft? What positions am I going to target? What coaches am I going to target? Well, I don't think, you know, obviously you're not going to go for like an offensive line focused offensive coordinator or anything, but I do think that's so obviously been an issue with the development of quarterbacks in the past. And it is hard to watch the hits that Mayfield has been taking. Sometimes he holds on to it too long, but a lot of them are on the line, I think. So that's probably where I'd go. I mean, on defense, I don't think they have that many holes.
You go back to Dak Prescott as having one of the better rookie seasons as a quarterback, and you know what they had? They had a dominant offensive line that had some continuity. Oop. So, fine, Lenny. Linus.
All right, last team before the break. Another rookie quarterback, another struggling offensive line, another struggling offense with a good defense. It's the Arizona Cardinals, who ranked 31st in offense and 9th in defense. So I think pretty clear where the issue is on this team. Coaching is another issue here. You know, they made the switch to Byron Leftwich, and I don't know if I would establish causality there, but Josh Rosen did have the best game of his season last week. Really the best quarter, maybe? Which is, you know, so I don't want to say that is necessarily because of the coaching or whatever, but what have you seen so far out of Rosen? Like, what do you think is been the biggest problem with this team?
Yeah, I think it's quite obviously the offensive line. And I think that he has David Johnson, but outside of that, I know Larry Fitzgerald is old reliable, but he's not necessarily explosive. And I do think that it's hard to assess a team that's in flux on offense. Like, it's hard to assess how good they were if the offensive coordinator that was there was not stable. It's hard to assess how good they are with Byron Leftwich, because he's just getting in. It's not as if he's had a chance to kind of install the principles the way that he wants. You don't get enough time during the week to kind of reshape the offense. So I think it's hard to evaluate all those things. The one thing that and this is maybe a little bit of confirmation bias because Rosen was one of my favorite quarterbacks going into the draft, but the one thing that I do feel is true is that Rosen has shown that he has the ability to, and maybe he won't be able to do it consistently, but in spurts and in plays and in series, you're like, hey, that looks like a guy that you can build a team around. So that's encouraging.
So you've been more impressed by him than Mayfield.
I have been, yes.
Interesting. Yeah,
full disclosure, it's not as if I've been watching every single snap of the worst teams in the league, but I do try to check in on the quarterbacks, and again, it's a little bit of confirmation bias. I want him to be good because I thought that he was better than Mayfield, and I thought he was better than Darnold, and I think
really?
I like Lamar Jackson more. Yeah, I thought he was... He was better than those guys. I think it's...
You know, it's so hard to project these guys, man.
It is so hard.
I mean, outside
hard,
of Allen.
I've come to believe...
We'll get to that.
And my theories on quarterback evaluation change from day to day. But one thing that I think is hugely important, and this bodes well for Mayfield, is accuracy. I've come to believe that there are a few things more important than accuracy. Like, you can read, you can misread, but if you can put the ball where you want to put it, and I think that's one of the reasons why guys like Brett Favre had such a good career. Brett Favre didn't read anything. I remember hearing, I think it was Hasselbeck again, who said that he had to explain to Brett Favre what a nickel was. Like, they said they're in nickel defense, and Brett Favre's in the NFL, and he's like, huh, what's the nickel? Like, if you can put it exactly where you want to put it, it doesn't matter whether they're open or not.
Yeah, I think you're spot on about Rosen and his accuracy. I mean, in his first complete start against Seattle, I was really impressed by him. And he had his wide receivers dropped a few throws, and when he was under pressure a lot, because that line is not very, it's probably the worst in the division. But you know, he showed me a lot, especially in the intermediate area. Well, he showed me a lot in that area, by the way, in this last game. And it was against the Niners, which I was going to use as a caveat, but certainly the Raiders weren't successful against them in the fourth quarter. But he was able, you know, he hit a few big throws, was just connecting with guys in stride, hitting some passes up the seam really well, and they were able to get Larry Fitzgerald involved finally. I don't know if you saw him spike the ball.
Yes.
It's the first time he's ever spiked the ball because his son wasn't there, so it was cute. Christian Kirk, who was the second round wide receiver pick, I think has shown some real synergy with Rosen. So that's a guy that they can build around. Finally getting Johnson involved a little bit. Look, Johnson, last week I mentioned the Ravens had the second worst rushing yards before first contact. The Cardinals have had the worst. It's not his fault. Okay.
Well, I see you getting into those next gens. I like it. Anyway, proceed.
I'm just here to defend David Johnson's honor because obviously he's had a real downturn this season. But I think the vast majority of that can be attributed to how bad this offensive line has been. DJ Humphreys, left tackle, has not been good. The guys have been hurt, just all over the place. So I think it's pretty clear that that's been the biggest problem with the team, if I had to pick one. Coaching as well. On the defense side, you know, like I said, they ranked ninth. Imperfect up front, but I think the secondary has been really good. Buda Baker, the safety is just tremendous. Actually, you know, Ben Wickery, I said that right, yes, finally, been pretty good against opposite Patrick Peterson at cornerback. It's always been a problem with this team. Bethea, Boston, good. So I don't really think, you know, maybe the linebackers at times have been a area of struggle and they haven't generated maybe as much of a pass rush as you might expect out of this unit. But otherwise, I think the defense is pretty good. It seems pretty obvious to me that it's the offense, and I imagine that's the area they're going to target when they try to improve this roster next year.
Yeah, and I think there's room to improve the roster, and there are ways to improve the roster. I'm interested in seeing what type of offensive coordinator Byron Leftwich matures into, because I think that he at least deserves a full offseason. If they're going to stick with him, like, he deserves a full offseason to evaluate his play, his strategy, because right now I think it's not completely fair, even though they have, I guess it's arguable, but they've played a slightly better in spurts in this one game since Leftwich has taken over.
Yeah. Actually, I think their schedule, well, part of the reason, again, I didn't really want to, they've got the Raiders this Sunday. So, or no, pardon me. Oh, the Chiefs. Never mind. Well, I'm wrong.
That's worst spot.
Never mind. But then they got the Raiders after that. And so, yeah, we'll see. I mean, he has an easy place to improve from. If there's anything working for Leftwich, they have the worst offense in the NFL. So, it's not a bad situation. Weirdly, it's not a bad situation to walk into. All right. Gonna go through, some questions as always.
Question. Question. Lenny, for your thought.
What do you think was behind the whistle decision there, Dominique?
Calling a dog, right? Yeah. You're like, hey, dog.
Oh, he's like I guess. Yeah. Oh, I didn't even think about that. All right. So as always, we're going to run through questions. If you want to have your question answered, please leave a positive, always has to be positive, review, and I will answer it. So rolling quickly through these, Adam BD asks, when are you going to start writing books? Adam, give me a good subject and I'll consider it. Abe Vigoda, COU, that's an interesting name, asks me for my favorite non-clink NFL stadium and top three NFL fan base. Huh. Well, I want to hear, Dominique, your favorite stadium. Mine, I would say Soldier Field on like a fall day is just really lovely. I also really liked U.S. Bank, it's called, right? The Vikings' new stadium. That was really, I mean, I hate to choose like a new corporate feeling stadium, but it's just a wonderful experience. What is your favorite stadium of a team? Not teams you've played for.
Oh, not teams I played for? Oh, that sucks.
We can tell. Okay, well,
I would say, I'd say Denver, because they have natural grass and it's the best grounds crew in the league. That grass is always great. You never hear any complaints about it. And every team that played against us there would always comment on how good it was. And it's not just that it doesn't hurt as much when you fall on it, but it, like, you feel safer as far as like tearing things, because turf sometimes is tougher on it and when you have bad playing surface. So Denver's always had one of the best playing surfaces. So I go there.
Top three NFL fan bases. I gotta say it's going to be out of this list, right? Because I have nothing but respect for the worst teams fan bases who continue to come out. I mean, I gotta go Browns there.
Yeah.
You know, just in terms of like loyalty, Bills too, man. I mean, I'm just best fan bases. I'm defining as kind of loyal, to be honest. And I mean, in that weather, if you're still coming out and you're rooting for this Bills team, you're watching that offense, all the credit to you. So I'll go Browns, Bills. You know, I'll throw the Jets in there too, at this list.
I mean, maybe maybe just because the Cowboys are fresh in my mind because of their loss on Monday night, but They have a really huge fan base for a team that hasn't been all that successful in quite some time, so they deserve some honorable mention.
CLT Mikey asks, favorite moment that didn't involve the Seahawks? Well, like life moment? I mean, being born, meeting Lenny. I assume he means the football moment. I'll say that mentioning U.S. Bank Stadium reminded me of just being at the Super Bowl and watching the Philly special in person was really cool. Okay, not because of who I wanted to win, although maybe that played a little role into it as well. But just seeing something that crazy and unexpected in such a big moment was, I mean, I was in the press box, Dominique, and I was sitting next to one of our colleagues, well, not name, and we had to clutch each other to not cheer because you can't cheer in the press. But it was so cool. Kyle Slaffin asks, which quarterback would you accept for Darnold? Well, I assume this was sent a little bit earlier when Darnold was playing better. We go to the Jets. So there's a lot of quarterbacks I would trade for Darnold. But let me put it this way. Okay, so we're coming off of Monday Night Football, and I think Mariota looked pretty good. He's been up and down. At this point, Dominique, if you were the Jets, would you trade Darnold for Mariota?
No. I mean, I'm
contract
not in
obviously
on,
plays a big role in there.
Yeah, contract. I was leaving the contract out. Just
straight up.
Yeah, I mean, Mariota's a finished product at this point, and he's not getting better. Darnold is obviously not as good as Mariota right now, but Darnold, there's potential to get better and to improve, which I don't think there is that. I think the only way you see improvement out of Mariota is with a different scheme, not with him actually getting better.
FJ Idos, Fudos, I'm going to pronounce that like Fjord, asks, will you have Poppy the Legend on the pod? Fudos, I don't think Poppy knows what a podcast is. Jmart2075 asks, again, some of these questions are a little dated, is Demaryius Thomas washed and has midnight come for Keenum? Well, we'll talk about the Broncos at the end of this podcast, so we'll get to the Keenum thing. This was obviously posed when Thomas was still on the Broncos, but I do not think he's washed. I don't think he's, you know, as good as he was, but I think he's still a very usable NFL player. DWicker7 asks, can listeners check in on Twitter as Kimes Times reporters? So for those who don't know, there's this thing called the looks like game that the Dan Le Batard show does where people try to say this person looks like, and then they'll come up with something. And somebody, one of his listeners said, Mina Kimes looks like she published a newspaper in high school called the Kimes Times, self-published, I think. And then I responded, yes, actually, this is true. I had a picture of the Kimes Times, but it was not high school. I was in, I think, maybe sixth grade or something. I was 12. So the question was, can you be a Kimes Times reporter? And no, you have to be a Kimes. 44A asks, should Carroll call the two-minute offense all game long? I just don't think that they have the personnel at this point. The Dude Abides 34. If you're GM of the Chargers and Ozzie call, ooh, this is a great question. Okay, Dominique, I want to hear your answer on this. If you're GM of the Chargers and Ozzie calls and offers Justin Tucker, what would you trade for him?
Oh, everything? I mean, anything short of like a starting quarterback. I mean, I think Justin Tucker is that valuable. A kicker who can hit, who is, well, until this year, is 100% on extra points and also can hit 50, 60-yard field goals. Like, that's hugely valuable. Those are points that can be scored. So, and kickers play forever. You'll have a kicker there for the next 10, 15 years. So,
yeah, I think he's got 1 year left on his deal, so they'd have to extend him. Moving on to the next bad team. I don't know, man. They got the quarterback of the future. It's San Francisco. What do you think about Nick Mullins?
I mean, he's great. What do you mean? What do I think? Like, his debut was better than anyone else in NFL history, or almost at least. It was second coming
against
of Cam
the Raiders.
Newton. Yeah. No, I mean, that was fantastic. It's one of those things where, I've come to recognize that players like primetime games, but so do offensive coordinators. they love it. Whenever you watch the good offensive coordinators.
We love Shanny around here.
The good offensive coordinators, they break out some new stuff for those primetime games. You rewatch the Saints games or the Rams games, you'll see some fancy stuff in the primetime game. So I my hat's off to a young Mr. Shanahan for what he's been able to do with Nick Mullins. I think he needs to trade him right now.
Okay, so obviously when we talk about what went wrong with the Niners, losing Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, is first and foremost, although I do want to talk about the defense, which has been really disappointing, although was able to smush the Raiders in this game. But watching what Shanahan did with Mullins, honestly what he's kind of done with CJ Beathard at times as well, but especially in this game, did you find yourself questioning whether they should have paid Jimmy Garoppolo? Because, like, does he need a really expensive quarterback? You know what I mean? Is that crazy?
I mean, he did it with RG3. I mean, I would be lying if I said that didn't cross my mind. But you don't pay a guy like that. And I said the same thing about Gurley. Like, you don't pay Gurley for what he does week to week. You pay him for when you're in a game and you can't scheme him open, or you can't scheme an opportunity, yes, and you can just hand it to him. Those games are going to come, and they are most certainly going to come in the playoffs, because in the playoffs, you often, what teams have been doing all season, they'll throw some new wrinkles in, and Nick Mullins is not going to be able to handle new wrinkles on a top team, or CJ Beathard. So that's where I would say they could be good. They could be a playoff team behind Shanahan scheming, but there's going to come a time when the scheming is not going to work.
And look, this offense, for all of Kyle Shanahan's brilliance, and then, by the way, the fact that they also have found some, I think, pretty nice players. George Kittle is a Pro Bowl level tight end. He's one of the better tight ends in the league. You know, I thought he was good. He's a big guy, can block, but he's really emerged as a pass catcher. You saw that in this game, that throw that where it was the best, Mullins' best throw of the game is when he hit Kittle in stride there, right? So he's excellent. Matt Breda's really great. Now that I say that, by the way, if there's a player they shouldn't have paid, it's Jerick McKinnon, not Jimmy Garoppolo, who was an overpay, I think. And Breda, you know, he's not as good of a pass catcher as McKinnon, but everything else he can do. He has, you know, the speed and power, I think, that McKinnon has. Marquise Goodwin, you know, he's a piece. He's a guy you can build around. Garcon's taken a step back. Mike McGlinchey, the left tackle, has been really good in I think, an offensive line that's really emerging. What shall we say? Well, I don't, that's wrong. Emerging, because Joe Staley is like 300 years old and he's been really good. But it's been as good as they need it to be. But all of that said, they're the 27th offense in the league by DVOA. Now, how that has to do with the defense and, you know, and CJ Beathard or whatever, but you're right. I think all things considered, you still want the better quarterback, just, you know, not just because your offensive coordinator is great doesn't mean you don't want the better guy under center. I just really quickly, the defense. Why am I letting Lenny boss me around?
I don't understand why you're respecting that. No,
on this podcast.
Barrel on.
Yeah. Barrel on. All right. Well, this defense has just been disappointing from top to bottom, because even when Jimmy Garoppolo went down, Dominique, I thought I would see some improvement from them. But at the end of the day, they've drafted so many guys on the defensive line who are just, we talk about Solomon Thomas, Arik Armstead, DeForest Buckner. Nobody's really emerged. And we've said, well, it's, you know, they drafted the wrong guys for the scheme, but just watching them, I guess Buckner has impressed me at times, but they haven't really been able to get a pass rush. In fact, in this game against the Raiders, the guys who got to, it was like Cassius Marsh and something called a Dakota Watson. So, you know, when you look at this defense, do you see building blocks? Let me put it that way.
Not really. It's the problem. And like the point about, drafting D linemen for the right and wrong scheme, like it's an astute point to make. However, the more I watch defensive linemen play, it's like either they're good or they're not. So like when Aaron Donald was drafted, he was drafted into a 4-3 system. And Dominican Sue's another guy who's a 4-3 guy. But those guys, I've watched a lot of them recently. Those guys are good in a 3-4 system. It's like Aaron Donald is an undersized guy. You would think that he can't play end, which is essentially an interior position, in a 3-4 at his size, but he is the best defensive lineman in the league at that position. So I don't know.
Right.
Maybe it's unfair of me to look at Aaron Donald and say, if he can do it, other guys can do it. But I think too much is, a lot of times we give too much to saying, well, this guy isn't perfect for this system. If you're a football player, you're a football player. You can get out there and make it work in the system.
And we're talking about guys who are drafted in the first half of the first round. I'll just wrap up the defense by saying, you know, Reuben Foster, who has looked really great at times, he's clearly hurt, so I don't really feel comfortable criticizing him. But, you know, they need a free safety. Jacquissi Tartt's been pretty good. And then they need a cornerback opposite Richard Sherman. All right, moving on to the Buffalo Bills. Perhaps the epitome of the trends we've just been describing in terms of bad teams. Great defense, bad rookie quarterback, historically bad offense. It's not hard to diagnose what happened here, but, you know, I think it's harder to pick a single problem with this offense. What's a good thing? Let me put it that way. Okay. Is there anything good to be taken out of this offense?
They were a playoff team a year ago.
Crazy. That's insane. What?
Were a playoff team a year ago. Don't you remember when they had the battle of the quarterback running backs against the Jags last year?
Where I try to block that game out.
Where Bortles ran for more yards than he threw. It was a really atrocious game, but they were a playoff team a year ago. And if you can't score points, I guess there's really no shining. There's nothing to point to on this team and say, that's exciting. That's something to build on offensively.
Yeah. I mean, we can, you know, Peterman is Peterman. We don't need to talk about him.
Yeah, I don't want to bash.
Or Derek Anderson. I know. It's not fun anymore. Can we talk about it? I don't even like it. It's crossed the line now.
It's not fun anymore, where it's just, and his interceptions this week were like.
Not really his fault.
Yeah, they weren't really his fault, but it kind of feels like. I don't know. He gets his sweat on the ball or something, and then the ball is like attracted to other people. I don't know what it is, but I don't want to talk about Peterman.
They made him throw like 300 times. So I'm like, what are you doing? I mean, whatever. So let's talk about the rest of the, okay. Well, what I was going to say is that even before Peterman and Anderson, Josh Allen was not playing well. Okay.
No.
So people came into my mentions after that first game. Remember you and I did that podcast?
Yeah, we
had the Wordle, the white hurdle.
The white hurdle was great.
Well, I don't want to say like who was. I don't like to, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, at the time, we recognized that a lot of his yards were yak.
We did.
It's not as if. So I mean, even then, people didn't have much of a leg to stand on. They just saw they got a win over a team that we thought was better than it actually turns out it was, and he's actually not. Very good quarterback.
He hasn't played well. But like a lot of that is not his fault. A lot of that is this offense. First of all, they blew up their offensive line. Shockingly, that didn't work out. Kelvin Benjamin was the centerpiece, right? We know how bad he's been. McCoy hasn't been able to do anything. They pay a fullback $2 million. I just saw that. Patrick DeMarco. Yeah, some quarterbacks would be better or passable in this system, but it's hard to, while Josh Allen didn't show me anything, I don't think there was any universe in which he even could, okay, in this, with given what he was, what he's working with here.
You don't think so? Okay, let me roll this out there. The Jets and the Bills, pretty bad teams. I think we don't give enough credit to the New England Patriots. No, I'm just kidding. We don't give enough attention to the division that a team is in and the impact that it has on the expectations of a team and the ways that teams are built and how much time they get. Because like we often point to one of the reasons why the Patriots being as good as they've been for as long as they've been is because their division has been trashed. But I also think their division is kind of trashed because they've been so good and the teams in their division are in constant flux trying to catch up to them and they don't take the time to properly rebuild in any way. And I think that is the Bills in the last year have done so many things that seem to be like, in conflict, where it's like we make this move because this is obviously a rebuild, and then we bring in a high-priced free agent, or we trade away some draft picks because it seems like we're going to make a push. Like, it just seems like they're always just changing for the sake of change, and I think part of that is just because the looming specter of the Patriots always in that division. I think it hurts their teams, and I don't think it's a coincidence that two of the teams that are seemingly always in the bottom of the league happen to be in their division.
That's interesting because it's kind of a chicken or egg question, right? Because we always say, well, the Patriots they benefit from playing with these crappy teams, but you're hypothesizing that the teams are crappy in part because of the pressure to, you know, knowing that mediocrity won't be good enough against the Patriots. It's hard to say. I think the Jets have a much better future, perhaps. I mean, it obviously depends on what coaches they hire because I don't think Bowles is going to survive the season, but if I had to look at their, you know, these two teams, and we're going to talk about them next, and their rosters and their prospects, I'm more optimistic about New York for various reasons we'll get to. So I don't think, you know, I think if there's a team that has a better chance to improve despite what we've been talking about, it is them. All right. Moving on to the aforementioned Jets. So another good defense, 10th in defensive DVOA, another trash defense or offense, but an offense that's fluctuated a lot, Dominique, right? Because there's been at times where Sam Darnold's looked really good.
Yeah, I mean, he started season off against the Lions, and we thought that this was a legitimate team, or they looked like a legitimate team that we had to at least pay some attention to because of how well he played and how well that defense played. And the defense has been pretty consistently good throughout this season, but he has not been. And I think the big question about Sam Darnold is, can the turnovers be fixed? And the track record would suggest that it's not just that he got into the league and the game will slow down for him and he'll get better at it, because presumably college games slowed down for him and he felt comfortable in that USC offense and he still turned the ball over a lot. And I am not one who is super hard on quarterbacks for throwing interceptions, because I think oftentimes we're comparing quarterbacks to Aaron Rodgers, where if we're so hard on quarterbacks for throwing interceptions, then we end up with quarterbacks who don't win games. That's how you end up with game managers. And I think that somebody like Darnold has the potential to be more than a game manager when he's at his best. And if we start banging on him about these interceptions all the time, I think he turns into Alex Smith, which is fine, but it's not the ceiling of his potential. But who knows if he can ever do away with, because the interception at this current rate is unsustainable for a good team.
Right. Hey, how do you train a quarterback out of throwing interceptions is an interesting question, because that was always the thing with Winston, right? Jameis Winston, you know, well, at some point he's going to stop doing that. And well, he didn't, right? Which is why, you know, it appears that his future might not be in Tampa Bay. So, but there are rookie quarterbacks who throw a lot of interceptions and fix those issues. And I do wonder how much of that is just the development of the quarterback and coaching, and how much of it is the offensive line playing with wide receivers they trust. Because Sam Darnold I don't think his offensive line is terrible, especially compared to some of the lines we've talked about, but his weaponry is not great. They lost Powell. They've had injuries, and Quincy Enunwa's been hurt, and he's not really been able to develop chemistry, I think, with Robbie Anderson. There's no, you know, he doesn't have a Larry Fitzgerald, right? Like, there's, well, not that Larry Fitzgerald's been Larry Fitzgerald for Josh Rosen, but he doesn't have, like, a possession guy who he's learned to lean on, which is something you see happen sometimes with rookie quarterbacks. There's Jermaine Kearse, who's, I guess, the possession guy, but he hasn't really popped this season. I don't know. It's not a great situation. And it does make me wonder, Dominique, and this cuts to what we were talking about earlier with sit, start, mentoring, whatever, do you think Sam Darnold should play the rest of the season, or do you think he'd be better off sitting behind McCown a little bit and learning from him?
Yeah, I think he should absolutely play. I mean, I think that maybe he doesn't have to play every game, but I think he should absolutely play. Once you put him out there, I'm not sure what you gain by then pulling him back. I think that you can learn things from watching, but you also learn a lot more from playing. There's some like practice simulations that just don't work unless you do them in the games. And so the one question, the big question for him, we all know, is like, can he fix these interceptions? And this conversation that we had has like prompted me to want to like go watch his interceptions, because I'm developing this kind of thought in my mind, like what are the types of interceptions that can be corrected? And I think that that would be interesting to go back and watch him and see if these are like bad reads, which I guess you could argue a bad read is something that you can improve upon, or if they're inaccuracy, obviously, or if they're pressure induced, or if they're tips and overthrows. Like, these are things that I think might
forcing it.
Yeah, it might give you some, or if they're like late game, it's 3rd and 6 in one possession game, then you throw a pick right there and whatever. You got to throw it into a tight spot. I don't know. It'd be interesting to look at some of these situations, or look at all these situations, and try to be able to make a projection on whether you think that the interception problem is something that could be fixed, or if it's something that is just the way, the type of quarterback that he is.
And is it correlated with style, or which I think it clearly is with Winston. I mean, Mariota is an interesting example, because he had that 2016 season where he was really quite good and he threw very few interceptions. And then the following year, not only did he throw interceptions, and last season rather, he just looked like he was throwing at the defenders, right? And they were, I mean, it was just insane. And so I found myself wondering, and I don't think, you don't think of him as a gunslinger by any means, the way you do with Winston. So yeah, I did find myself wondering, is this something like, is it a vision issue with him? Because that feels like something that's not going to go away. And I don't know. So I agree with Darnold. There does have to be a little bit of an evaluation process. I think also a lot of it in terms of how you fix it is just designing the right offense around him, right? Where, you know, he has easy checks and easy reads and he doesn't feel pressure to make the impossible play. But to do that, you have to have not just the guy, you know, Jerry Bates is their play call. You have to have the personnel. And I don't know if they have the personnel right now.
So I think having a good defense would help him not feel like he needs to make every play. But I mean, he's always kind of felt like that. And he's always played like that. But I think before I make any more opinions about this, like, I think I really need to go back and watch it and watch all this, because I see the interception numbers, but I don't necessarily have in mind what kind of interceptions.
Some of them are crazy. I have watched some of them. Some of them are really dumb.
Yeah. Okay. So then the question is a dumb interception something that you can improve upon? Like, what would you rather have? Someone who throws dumb interceptions, like misreads or maybe inaccuracy, or someone who throws interceptions because they're taking risk? Like, I'm not sure. Or obviously you'd love it to be like, oh, it's just pressure in his face. If we could protect him, then we'd be better off. But
yeah. And your point about the defense is really important, I think, because this defense, not only they're good, I think they're going to be good for a while. They've got a lot of young talent. I think Jamal Adams is just, you know, quietly secondary. Become one of the best safeties. And whole secondary is good. Tremaine Johnson's, you know, he's definitely cost too much. But otherwise, Marcus May, Adams, I really, really love the inside linebackers, Avery Williamson and Darren Lee. Darren Lee in particular, man, they've just been fantastic. Leonard Williams, not elite, but really, really good this year. So
shout out to Denard Wilson, secondary coach, my strong safety at Maryland.
Huh. Is he new to the team or has he been there for a minute?
He's been there for a little while. I think he's been there for the whole Bowles regime, but taking over that secondary, very highly paid secondary. They're playing well.
He should stick around, unlike some of the other coaches. All right, moving on. Our last team is, you know, I wouldn't call them, they don't seem to fit in the same group as everyone else. And by the way, this is last week's DVO rankings. They were 10th in offense and 7th in defense, which is crazy. Especially the offensive ranking. That's Denver. Okay. Another team where the coach is on the hot seat. And Dominique, as I was thinking about them and thinking about the biggest issues on this team, obviously Case Keenum has not been I don't want to say as advertised, because if you look at the course of his career, he's exactly what he was as advertised. He's just not been who he was last season. But I think, you know, Vance Joseph, you saw in this last game where they had the issue with the missed field goal at the end. He's made a lot of bad decisions this season. I don't really blame fans for kind of turning against him and him being on the hot seat. And I think it's pretty unlikely he survives the year.
Yeah, I mean, John Elway gave him like some tepid support, but I think you're probably right. And it's hard to find a defense for Vance Joseph. I mean, I guess the defense is that they have been good at things. like you mentioned, their DVOA ranking, like they aren't a bad team. So it's hard to say that they're a good team with a bad coach. Well, I guess it's very easy to say that they're a good team with a bad coach, but they're not a bad team with a bad coach, which I guess is slightly better. I think that there are lots of coaches who have jobs in this league that this team would be worse under, but Vance, I think they have higher expectations. And again, it goes back to that. And I don't think that they're going to meet those expectations anytime soon, because it goes back to like the divisional thing that we're talking about. They are in a division with the Chiefs and the Chargers. It's going to be tough. No matter who comes in, it's going to be pretty tough to make the playoffs from that division. And sadly, we have a tough time. I don't know if it's bad or good, but we do have a tough time evaluating anybody other than just for their raw performance numbers. And if you don't make the playoffs for a few years in a row, then you're a bad coach, which doesn't necessarily mean that you're a bad coach. It just means that you didn't make the playoffs.
And they had a great draft this year, by the way. Philip Lindsay, Bradley Chubb, Cortland Sutton, just, you know, they've got a bunch of pieces. It's just the quarterback issue. But Let me go through some of the last game. So they barely lost to Houston, right? The last second missed field goal. But tell me if you disagree with how he coached it, right? So at the end of the first half, they went for a 62-yard field goal, missed, and then the Texans made one, which ended up being the difference in the game. But then at the end of the game, I think so much attention is paid to this, not just because they missed or whatever, but Demaryius Thomas was critical afterwards. And yeah, he might be a little bit salty about being traded, but he said, that's what they do over there. I ain't a part of that no more. We like to win over here. And then also Bill O'Brien, did you see that? Do you think he said it?
It looked like it to me. I mean, I don't know what else he would have been saying in that situation.
He was recorded, for those who don't know, moving his lips and being, shall we say, critical of Vance Joseph. But that was lip reading, so who knows. What he did was, how much time was left? But at the beginning of the drive, there was over 3 minutes left, and they got to the 37 after a fourth down completion to Emmanuel Sanders. There was a 5-yard pass, and then there was 40 seconds left. They ran a final play that was a Philip Lindsay run that was stuffed for a yard, took the timeout, kicked the field goal. I mean, I guess the question is, like, do you think they should have passed it there? Because there's certainly enough time, right? Or do you think settling for the long field goal was the right decision? It was, I think, 52 yards or something?
No, I mean, I tend to like my coaches to be more aggressive, but he's in one of those situations where where the result is how we're going to react to it. So had he thrown it and it not worked out, we'd have been like, well, this is a makeable field goal. You're in Mile High where kicks sail further.
So Shanahan, why'd you just run?
Yeah. I feel bad second guessing him on that situation, but he's in a situation. He's put himself in a situation where he's done enough foolish things that no matter what he does, unless he wins, we're going to say he was wrong.
I think that's true, especially talking about that last field goal. Actually, the first one was probably deserved more criticism than the other one. But, you know, Brandon McManus has been a reliable kicker. So I don't know, you know, how you can, I mean, I guess 62 yards is pretty far, but
yeah, but yeah, I guess, like, yeah, 62 is far. And I don't think many people would have criticized him for that, but I mean, that's being aggressive. So like, if I'm on a team, I'd rather a coach do things that were aggressive and showed confidence in us, which is like, all right.
Yeah.
I have confidence in my defense. I have confidence in my kicker. Like, those are things that I would prefer rather than him kneeling it out or doing something like that. So,
yeah,
that's my tepid support for Vance.
Well, look, the biggest issue is Keenum. I mean, which is weird because he hasn't been horrible. He's not good. So do you think they can get out of his contract next year? He signed a 2-year deal. I think they can get out maybe $7 million or something. It'll cost them about, I feel like I saw that somewhere. Like, do you think that they should stick with him one more season if he continues playing at the same level through the rest of the year? Or do you think they should try to move on?
Nah, absolutely stick with him. I mean, move on to what?
Yes. Well, that's going to be the huge issue, Dominic, when we get to these teams and what they should do. There's not a lot of quarterbacks either in the draft or in free agency this year.
I mean, it has to be discouraging though for Broncos fans and Vance Joseph. It's like, you think that if you can run the ball and rush the passer well, you'll have a good team.
Yep.
Like those are like tenets of football that have remained unchanged. They do both those things well and they stink.
That panting was really upsetting to hear there. But we have to obey the boss, Lenny. So, you know, as always, though, before we wrap up, Dominique, one final segment.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
First Mina? Question, should I quit Twitter?
Mina? Yes, absolutely you should quit Twitter. Can I ask some Dinks and Dunks? I got two.
What? Quick you ones. Can't? All right, fine.
Quick ones.
Fine.
Okay.
Right.
What should they do at coach of Ravens? What should they do with the quarterback at Ravens?
Stick with Harbaugh through the rest of the year if... Look, they're not going to go to the playoffs, but if Lamar Jackson shows no improvement or they're not able to, like, start the transition, then they got to move on.
Okay.
What do you think?
Has Le'Veon Bell hurt himself this season?
Yes.
All right. Done. Your turn.
I mean, the Le'Veon Bell thing is a much longer discussion that, you know, maybe we can have.
Nope. You said yes. Time. Dinks and Dunks.
Do you
Dink
disagree?
It and dunk it. Yes.
All right, back to my questions. If you were starting an NFL team, which of the rookie quarterbacks would you build around? Well, I guess I already know the answer now.
Lamar Jackson.
Really? Not Josh Rosen?
Josh Rosen.
Okay. You're not a hat guy, but if you became a hat guy, would you wear a fedora or like one of those newsboy caps? You know what I'm talking about? Like,
oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. I'd go newsboy more than fedora. Like, they're both pretty lame as far as I'm concerned, but I'd go newsboy if I had
hats?
To choose.
Do you
when it's cold outside.
All right. Oh, like a knit cap. I've seen you in
Yeah, that's
cap.
It.
I've never seen you wearing a baseball cap, actually.
Yeah, I don't like baseball.
I wear baseball caps. Okay, number four, in the spirit of Election Day, today is Election Day. When this podcast comes out, it'll be over. We'll be living in a new future. Which NFL quarterback would you vote for if he was running for president?
Patrick Mahomes.
Can you imagine him giving a speech?
It would be great.
All right, last question, as always, comes from Lenny. I had nothing to do with the writing of this question. Don't get angry with me if you don't like it. It's Lenny's question. I'm going to read it, as always, in his voice to honor the spirit of the question. Dominique, the Baltimore Ravens won the Super Bowl the year after you retired. Causation or correlation?
I'm going to really go ahead and say that it is definitely causation. I was holding back the team, so I left and
wow.
gave some room for the other people to shine and do better. I'm happy for them. They won the Super Bowl that year.
Well, Dominique, you always make me shine and do better when you're on the podcast by comparison. Thank you for joining, as always. Hopefully you All come right. back. Will you come back? Say yes or no.
Yes.